I feel like it's been forever since I've pushed those buttons. How long has it been?
I don't remember.
Okay. You want to chat a little bit before we...
Does that require energy?
That's the problem with these evening podcasts.
It's not just the evening. You're just like I haven't been getting sleep for like... I feel like it's been a couple weeks of like either one of my kids has woken me up, or it's been hot and I've been like tossing and turning, or I've gone to bed too late because I've had work to do. It's just, I can't catch a break. So I think what I need is a trip to Cancun. Could you imagine somebody taking a trip to Cancun right now and
relaxing?
There's
just no way.
Can you just imagine what that would be like for somebody? Hint, hint. Somebody in this room, and it's not me. To go to Cancun, Mexico, and just go about life as if all this isn't happening. Like, can you just imagine how nice that must have been for somebody?
I can imagine.
You can.
Well, let me tell you about it. No, it's funny. Like, I almost am, like, scared to tell people, hey, I got to go on a vacation, because that just seems so, like, bizarre.
I would not tell anybody.
Right?
Do not tell
anybody.
Okay,
so let's not talk about it on the podcast.
No, because everybody's going to feel badly that they're not the ones, including me, that they're ones that got to go, because everybody feels like we're in, like, the worst nightmare of our lives.
I know.
Being on the beach in Cancun, having who knows what cocktails you were having.
Yeah, but I think there are a lot of us, as in half the country, I think that... has come to realize this, you know, disease is not as serious as people say. And then the pandemic, you know, we maybe not have taken the right approach to it. And so I feel like probably half the country agrees with me that it is okay to take
vacation. Okay. But what I'm saying is people don't have money now.
Yeah.
They've lost money.
Yeah.
They have nobody to watch their kids. Their kids aren't in school.
Well, take your kids with us.
But you don't have young kids.
I know.
That's not really a vacation.
Yeah.
So it's just like all these other factors. It's not even so much about, I think it's okay to take a vacation. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. But I mean, it just sucks that we're in this circumstance of the world right now where you can't just look forward to anything, have something to do.
Oh, I know.
And you can't even really, you definitely can't share pictures of it.
Right. And how important is it to like be able to have something in your life that you're looking forward to? You're like, oh my gosh, I'm working so hard this week, or this next 2 weeks of work are just going to be hell. But oh my gosh, this is going to happen.
Right. You know, here's at the end of that tunnel.
I've heard from other people just over the years that they say, if you can always have something in your plans that you can look forward to, just kind of add something to your mental health.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to start that tomorrow. Just like in a week or 2 weeks or a month or what's the time?
It doesn't matter what. I mean, just like always have something going on. You're like, oh, I can't wait to do that next week, or I can't wait to do that 6 months from now. I mean,
6 months is too long away. That's
but like always kind of like have something.
Okay, and does dark chocolate count?
Yes. I can't wait to have dark chocolate.
I'm going to put it like in my calendar. But in 3 hours, you get to have dark chocolate. So it's okay that the children are terrorizing you right now, because in 3 hours, that dark chocolate is yours.
Whatever it takes.
Okay, so that'll be my short-term goals.
Yeah.
But I'll have long-term
ones. For me, you know, I think everyone's mental health has kind of been slightly, you know, under pressure.
You think? Know.
I know. I'm doing this. So,
was your first clue? That everybody's mental health. Is it because of my dark circles that have just gotten so much worse?
Or like all the medical reports and warnings, like watch out, mental illness is going to skyrocket.
Yeah,
this.
Or the CDC report, which I haven't gone through yet, but it talks about all the mental health outcomes.
I mean, for me personally, I mean, I've struggled just as much as anyone with this. And, you know, to have our family vacation canceled, you know, like we were going to go in June and then we're going to go in July and then we were going to go to one place in August, but then they, you know, didn't really open up their borders. And so we basically last minute switched to Cancun. And for our family, that's like something the kids look forward to all year. And our youngest child just graduated college, and this was basically like his
high school.
High school, thank you. This was his basically.
You have three kids, by the way.
I know.
You forget. You're still coming off your vacation high, huh?
I haven't lost my tan yet. But this is like his, you know, graduation from high school, moving on to college. You know, with the two older brothers and one of their wives came along, and we got to just go to Cancun to just basically let it all go for a week and get away from the world and just have fun as a family and do some fun things. And I mean, mentally, it did wonders for me. I mean, it really brings me peace. And
Thank God for the rest of us, huh? Have to deal with you.
I know. You're right.
We're like, I'm so glad you've had this retreat of an experience, Dr. Bob. You're refreshed and renewed.
And you're realizing now, every couple months, you tell me, Dr. Bob, do you need a vacation?
I think you should treat yourself.
When is your next vacation? No, but I mean, I can't tell you. I mean, people know. People have gone on vacation, you know, in the last month or two. You know, it's just nice to get away. We didn't watch the news even once.
I need a vacation. And,
yeah.
It's at that point where I'm like, I'm ready for one. But you know what I'm looking forward to that to me is going to feel like a vacation is our podcast tour.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to it because it's like a vacation in the sense that you're going to see new places.
Yeah.
But you're also going to connect with all these like-minded individuals, and you're going to have a sense of community with our community, our greater community, the medical freedom, informed consent community. And then after everything that's gone on, it's even more important, like you're saying, to have that. Like, I'm actually so looking forward to getting these dates booked, getting them on the schedule. We're just basically waiting to find out which venues and places will allow for meetings of that size.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've had some political meetings. I've seen people have political meetings that are bigger than that. So I don't see why we can't. So we're going to look into that because I so want to see everybody. You know, there's been so much isolation. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready to get back, you know, however safe, quote, safely we need to do it according to the rules. I'm ready to get out and be with people.
You're hoping to make it happen maybe even in the late fall if we can. And
or early fall, or Dr. Early Bob. Fall, stop trying to push it.
Wait, I'm
like 2021 looks like a good year. No. I mean, we're going to see. Yeah. Texas was our first stop, San Antonio and Dallas, two different nights. And so we're going to see.
We're going to try to make that happen.
Try to make that happen in fall. Because I mean, the thing is I feel like flu season is going to come and it's going to make everything worse.
Yeah. When that hits, but often not till December ish.
Right. So my point is we need to get some of these places in now because I feel like everything is going to shut down again for a period of time. So we might want to get at least half of these dates in if we can now and go see people, visit people, hug people, be with people, educate people.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I'm totally open and happy to hug people. I still don't want to shake people's hand.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's so weird. Like, so all my guy friends, when I see them, I mean, they might come up to like shake my hand. I'll just like go in for the hug because somehow a hug feels safer than shaking hands.
They're like, geez, are you lonely, Dr. Bob? What's with the hug? I just met you.
I think I was saying, shout out to Jocelyn. I think I saw her last week. She came by the house and like, I hadn't seen her for a couple of weeks because we were on vacation and she comes up and I like give her a big hug and she's like, oh, are we doing that now? I'm like, heck yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one thing you won't catch me doing is the elbow.
Oh, yeah.
The elbow bump is ridiculous. I've seen two men in a parking lot with masks on elbow bumping each other as a way to say goodbye after a walk that they
had
together.
But I feel like that's been scientifically proven to reduce the spread of COVID.
To reduce your social standing.
Yes, okay.
In the community because you look ridiculous. It's been scientifically proven to increase your dorkiness status. And this is confirmed, you guys. This is like peer reviewed.
Okay, let me make myself a note. Okay, stop elbow bumping. Okay.
Peer reviewed medical literature we're talking about here. Always evidence-based on the... Yeah. We haven't even introduced the podcast, by the way. We haven't welcomed in to our show.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Should we do that? Okay.
You do it.
Okay. All right.
When you open the door for somebody else.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Vaccine Conversation with Melissa and Dr. Bob. It is awesome to be back.
From a vacation,
as everyone knows, because that will all be pre-show banter that I'll leave on there. And don't roll your eyes at me.
You can't keep saying pre-show banter. Now the dorkiness quotient has just gone back up again. You're not supposed to tell them. They already know it's implied that it's pre-show banter because it's banter and it's before the show.
I know, but they didn't know that until we get to the show.
But
so
of
I'm just
course
reminding
they know
them.
It now.
What if they forgot?
They didn't. We have a smart audience.
Yeah.
Welcome back to an episode here, the Vaccine Conversation Podcast. Mm-hmm. I've been so used to introducing my episodes. Yeah. I have to remember what podcast this is. So as you guys know, or maybe know, I have my little sidecast called What They Aren't Telling You.
Which is awesome.
And I'm really
awesome.
So enjoying it.
Yeah.
I honestly wish I could do more episodes faster, get them edited out faster. And there's so much content to cover, and I'm mm-hmm. still backlogged with episodes okay. that I can't quite mm-hmm. get them out fast enough. And then something new will come up. I'm like, I gotta, and it just keeps adding to my list. I just can't quite produce the content as fast as I want to do it. So I think maybe yeah. at some later time, or a team, somehow develop a team in this process that I can do that way, because, you know, it's just a conversation, but right. it's about lots of different topics, and a lot of this stuff is time sensitive. So it comes up and you want to talk about it now.
Yeah,
so what you see with a lot of these social media influencers is they do video blogs, basically. And so that way they're getting stuff out right away, and there's nothing, there's no editing, there's nothing. It's so simple.
Yeah.
So this, it's a lot more work to do it, you know, an audio way, yeah. except you don't have to always put makeup on. So that's nice. Hey, ladies, you know what I'm saying?
Wait, you have makeup on.
Were you trying to
talk me into doing a Facebook Live tonight?
You know what? This is one of the first times I didn't. And the only reason I didn't is because I'm tired.
Okay.
But I thought about it. I thought about videoing this, because this episode today, we've done lots of interviews with different people, and we've been waiting to do this. I think we've mentioned it before on mm-hmm. here, that one of these times I was going to interview Dr. Bob, who yeah. is the gentleman you hear right now on this episode. So he's not even going to call in. He's here. And the kind of interviews that we've done, in-depth interviews, where we talk about kind of past history and work that we've done with lots of other people, it was always part of the plan to do one for Dr. Bob. And then I'm going to switch over to my podcast and continue interviewing him with a slightly different spin.
Yeah.
Because I was originally just going to take this episode and play it on my
yeah.
podcast too. But I realized that my podcast is more about the unpopular opinion. And so I really want to go into that side of it, the controversial side of it. Not so much the informational side of it, which is, you know, the past and the present and the work stuff that we do with everybody else. So I figure we'll handle that here. A lot of Dr. Bob fans that are our fans were already your fans long before we had this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people want to know about you and would like to learn more about you. And you're a hero to so many. So many people have read your book or referenced your book or used your book or been associated with your book over these last 15 years or so. And so that's I think the majority of who our following is for this podcast really came from you.
Yeah. Well, this will be a great time for people. Maybe if they haven't checked out your other podcasts, this will be a great time for that. Cause yeah, we will go into things on your podcast that we won't necessarily be discussing here, you know, on our podcast. Well, we'll see.
Because what they aren't telling you about Dr. Bob on this podcast,
they are going to tell you
on what they aren't telling you.
No, so wait, but they aren't telling you on your podcast.
But they may be. You have to tune in to find out.
There we are. Right.
So in case you're searching that, it's, you know, just like this one, iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, all the podcast platforms. It's a red logo with lips that have a zipper across, which is what they aren't telling you. So when you see that logo, you'll know that that's me, and lots of different topics that I've kind of covered on that. They're all social and political. A little bit of vaccine stuff, but we save most of that discussion for this, unless it's COVID, and then I go over there because Dr. Bob's over COVID.
I push you over there. I literally stop recording on ours.
You're like,
switch it over to yours.
So today we're going to talk to Dr. Bob and get to know him a little more. So you don't get to ask questions.
No, and I haven't even seen the questions.
I don't even have the questions. They're not printed. They're not printed awesome. Out, because I'm going to actually go from the beginning with the kind of things that I would ask.
Okay.
So this is going to be an off the cuff conversation. No interjecting, no guiding, no questions on your end. You can't be a
Ask
host.
Ask me about this. Yeah.
You cannot be a host this time. No chewing, no eating.
Can I drink water?
No coughing, no clearing of your throat. All those things cannot happen on this episode.
I'm trying to take a drink of water and keep making me laugh. Okay.
Don't spit out water on the microphones or the soundboard. No, they can't.
Right? Yeah.
But I can give him a play-by-play. He's drinking water. He just put the lid on. Okay. So, an in-depth interview. Welcome, Dr. Bob Sears, to the Vaccine Conversation Podcast.
Well, thank you, Melissa. I'm very happy to be on the show.
How did you hear about us?
How did I hear you? I looked up podcasts that are being censored on Facebook, and this was the one that showed up first.
Evidence-based podcasts that are being censored, and we were number one. That's so nice of them to keep us up high in the ratings under that category.
I do worry that they're going to start doing that, though, censoring. I mean, why won't they? Mm. I mean, why wouldn't they start censoring podcasts?
Well, we've seen a lot of that censorship happening right now over the last several weeks, so I think you're right. Yeah. But stop.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Stop switching topics. So... Today, we're talking with Dr. Bob Sears, who is a pediatrician from Southern California. He's had a practice in Southern California for how many years now?
And since 1998.
So do the math.
22 years.
Okay, yes. Thanks. I know, the end of my day.
Numbers are hard. I know they are.
So. Numbers. I have to carry the one somewhere in there. So Dr. Bob Sears is from a medical family, the Sears family, which there are other doctors in that family who have also made names for themselves, even before you did, in family medicine, and specifically touching on things like attachment parenting and a slightly holistic approach to child rearing and raising children and family life and all of that kind of stuff. So let's get in a little to your past. When you were one, no, just kidding. So you are one of how many siblings?
There are 8 kids
in your family.
Yeah. And I'm number 2.
So you're the second oldest.
Yes.
And you have a family, so you have a family of how many doctors now?
There are 4 doctors. There are my dad, my older brother, myself, and the next brother down the line. Yeah, so the 4 of us.
So when you were growing up, your dad was a practicing doctor.
Right.
What was that like as a kid with a doctor as a dad?
It was cool. I remember going to his office, you know, a number of times. I remember actually like running up and down the hallway in his office. And
I bet he loved that.
Yeah. You know what? It probably just went right over his head. You know, it's like background noise. I don't even notice. I remember actually we had this like giant fire truck. I used to kneel on it and like pick with my feet and like go up and down the hallway, you know, at his office, his old wooden building in Toronto, Canada. And
okay, so you were born in Canada.
I wasn't.
No, you were born here, but then you moved
to the United States. Yeah, we moved to Canada for about 7 years. But it was a quieter time. I feel like I don't remember him being crazy busy. He was around a lot. And I feel like what really made an impression, he was always around for like vacations and weekends. And he was always like there. He went to work during the week, but he was never, you know, traveling or away on, like, I felt like he didn't have to miss things because he was at work. He always made the time to
So he
to
was present.
There. Yeah, yeah.
As a father, but so you got to see him as a working man, a professional, somebody who was able to do something important, but also was able to balance that by being there at home too, which is probably something I think most men really struggle with. And I don't even know if they realize they're struggling with it, because I think that, and this is my bias for this coming out, but it kind of feels like when men tend to focus on a career, that comes first, and that they aren't able to multitask very well. You know, like the brain, they've shown studies where the female brain is able to, the hemispheres are able to actually connect in a way that they don't in men. And there's like connective tissue that kind of, you know, crosses so that there's that communication back and forth. And there tends to be a more like single focus, solitary focus with men, that if you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be somebody successful, you're going to be a career man. To be able to balance like that seems definitely like the exception, not the norm, which I think was to your advantage growing up, because obviously that gives you a model that sort of teaches you how to do the same thing, where you can have a successful practice, but you can also be a person, be a parent, and all those things.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of a doctor, I think of crazy long hours, super stress. You're always available to your patients, never really available to be home. And it's nice to hear that your dad was able to kind of create some kind of balance that modeled that for you, because I think you also have created that balance.
There was a time, there was like a milestone in his life, or like a turning point, a decision point he came to, where he was actually offered to be the head of the neonatal intensive care unit at the largest children's hospital in the world in Toronto. He was offered to be the actual head there. And he had, you know, my older brother and I, and he was just, you know, a new dad, a young family, and he basically realized I have to choose. I'm either going to be a family man with a job, or I'm going to be a career-oriented doctor. And he made
with
the choice.
Family.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he made the choice to be the family man. And he gave up that head position, and he just basically became like a pediatrician with an office, just in a private practice. And I know for sure he does not regret it, because he went on to have lots of kids. But he made that choice mm-hmm. early on. And I'm glad he made that choice. And something that he always tried to instill in me was, I mean, he wanted me to be a doctor, but he told me how important it was, if you want to have that kind of family life, if you can be self-employed, it kind of gives you that freedom. You know, you can then make your own schedule. You can kind of decide what, you know, to what level you're going to work versus mm-hmm. not work. Whereas if you are working for someone, for a big company, you really have to, someone else is in charge of your schedule.
Right.
And so that kind of had as much of an impression on me. It was him being self-employed as much as it was him being a doctor. And so my goal was, yeah, I want to grow up to be a self-employed doctor.
Hmm. And that leads me to my next question, which was, when did you realize medicine was something you also wanted to go into?
Probably in high school, I would say. Yeah, I think in high school, I loved watching what he did. And
did you know you wanted to do pediatrics?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, I thought briefly about surgery, because surgery was so fun when you're in medical school.
Mm.
But that was, you know, that didn't last very long. And then I thought about obstetrics, because I was already kind of alternatively minded.
Mm.
And I actually already had my own child, and I was very familiar, like, with the Bradley, you know, method mm-hmm. and natural childbirth, and how, you know, I felt drawn towards kind of thinking of childbirth kind of outside the box, or
right.
not the popular, you know, opinion, or the popular way to do childbirth in hospitals.
But ironically, that used to be the popular opinion.
Right.
For centuries, like,
oh, right.
which is
I
so
know.
Funny
yeah,
that
yeah.
it became unpopular when it was really the only way we ever did anything.
I know.
It's interesting how Western medicine can do that, that there can be something like circumcision, for example, that comes around just pretty recently.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you don't want to do that, and somehow you're going, it's an unpopular opinion. And
right,
you're thinking
right.
like all like of what? Humanity never did this until the last 50 years.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's, you can't really talk about it if you're doing something that's different.
Yeah.
It's interesting how Western medicine does that.
Yeah.
They really grasp onto a concept, and then they make it like universal. Everybody has to do it. And if you don't do it, then now you're the outlier.
Yeah.
But in reality, you were just going back to the natural process
yeah.
of childbirth for all women.
Yeah, and I thought it would be fun to be an OB that offered that to people. But then, you know, I was married, and you know, we already had our first child, and Cheryl and I talked, and we basically thought, you know, that would have him be you know, not at home
right.
a lot. And
that's true.
I'm not a middle of the night person,
mm-hmm.
and I need. You know, I can get up early to do things, but I can't stay up late to do things. And so we just decided that wasn't for me. And we knew pediatrics would kind of offer me the same, you know, think outside the box approach to medicine that obstetrics would have. And so I could have done family medicine, I suppose, and then done both. But no, pediatrics, and kind of made that decision early on in medical school.
So before you got to medical school, as a teenager, were you a trouble kid? Were you a follow the rules kid?
I was a follow the rules kid.
Really? Like completely? Like no?
Totally.
Oh my gosh.
Almost just about following
wow.
the rules. Okay, so my parents, we always laugh about this. Like probably the worst thing I did, and you're just going to roll your eyes, you know, because this is, you know, probably not nearly the worst thing people could do, but the worst thing I did was, I was a freshman in high school, and it was it was Friday night, and we had a football game the next day. And so when you're on the football team, you have a curfew and you can't stay out late. But there was a concert I wanted to go to that Friday night at church. Undercover, you know, all you Undercover fans out there. It was
that's the name of a...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the name of...
I thought you were saying you went undercover, like in a hoodie or something, so that nobody saw that you were staying up past curfew.
Too. I did that too. Yeah, I actually wore a hoodie.
So you went undercover to see Undercover.
Yes, I did.
That's really funny.
So I told my parents goodnight, and I, like, you know, went to the room.
You snuck out?
No, yeah. So I closed the door, and I...
Even I've never done that.
I know, because you told me you've been a rule follower your whole life, too. So I put stuff under the covers in my bed to make it look... I climbed out the window.
Oh my goodness.
I crawled around the house. I got on my bike. I rode my bike, like, it was like a half hour bike ride or something, to the church. Watched the concert.
As a freshman too. Yeah, that was pretty young. You're 14.
But it was a Christian concert at a church. So you know,
you're still breaking the rules.
I know. Yeah. So, and then afterwards I rode the bike home, and my parents, it turns out they found out.
Oh.
Like a week later they found out. And so then, like, a couple days later, they offered my brother and I an amnesty, like, opportunity. They're like, hey, if you guys have ever done anything wrong, you just want to let us know, but we'll give you amnesty for it. And
you're like, no, why are you bringing it up?
I know. I'm like, looking at my brother, did you do something? And he's like, I didn't do anything.
You're like, you guys are so funny.
So, you know, I fessed up. But yeah, that was kind of my moment.
How did they find out?
I think a friend, like someone, not one of my friends.
They didn't even find out that day.
No, night.
Or
got away
or
with
the next
it.
Day.
Right.
Whoa.
Like one of their friends, one of their adult friends was at the concert too. And like we were just mentioning to them, hey, yeah.
I could have never gotten away with that because my mom stays up all hours of the night. So it's not like she goes to bed at 10 and then you're good. Like there's no way. So I never attempted it.
But I know all our listeners are like, oh my gosh, Dr. Bob, you listened to Undercover growing up as a teenager. I'm like,
I don't think
so. So
that's
the one of you out there who knows who Undercover is. Yeah. You get me. You would have snuck out too. It was like Christian, sort of punk rock, but not quite, not like screamo punk, but more like, new age, new wave. There you go. New wave punk rock.
New wave Christian punk rock.
Yes, from the 80s.
Got it.
Yes,
okay.
I think. Were you born yet in the 80s? You were? Okay. Yeah.
In the late 70s.
Oh,
whoa,
that's right.
Whoa.
You're right. That's right.
Uh-huh.
80s music. Am I right, people?
Okay, they can't hear you right at this exact moment, so they can't write. They can't, like, talk back. This is not a Facebook Live. Okay. Now you're getting confused.
Thumbs up. Give me thumbs up. On the way. We're not.
Oh, geez. Okay, so high school rule follower.
So I was a rule follower, yeah.
And
I was the one that, like, got all the straight A's. I, you know, kind of succeeded in things. I didn't so much break the rules. And
then you decided to go to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And you did that. And then you decided to have and open a practice, which was the next logical step from that. And when you started working as a pediatrician, was it what you thought it was going to be? Was the day in, day out, the actual work, the actual job, was that kind of what you had hoped for as you were in medical school?
You know, it started out to be way more tiring and way more business oriented than I thought it would be and than I was hoping it would be. And I didn't like that. That actually took away a lot of the joy of it. I was, you know, contracted with medical insurances because my dad was. I joined my dad's practice, and so I basically just took over for a lot of the work that he did. But he was with insurance, and I had to become a businessman. And Cheryl and I were running the office, and I didn't enjoy it because I felt like, you know, in order to make a living on the $40 a checkup that insurance would pay you, I had to see like 6 or 7 or 8 checkups an hour.
Oh my gosh.
Just to make enough money to like you know,
an
pay
hour?
My nurse.
And jeez.
I know. Can you imagine? But if you're getting paid like $40 a checkup by Blue Cross, then that's hard to live on. And then, you know, some insurances would pay $100 a checkup, but your overhead's so large that, so I was seeing like, you know, 40, 50 patients a day.
Jeez.
But I was young, I was ready for it. So I was just totally in it. And I spent some years doing that. And, you know, I liked it, but I think that was the one thing that was sucking the joy out of it.
But that's the downside for a parent also, is that you feel like you're being rushed like cattle through
totally.
These appointments.
Yeah.
So it's like that setup, that process, whatever they have that set up as, needs to be fixed, because when you go in, especially as a new mom and you've got a new baby and you're overwhelmed and you're stressed and all these things are going on, and maybe they've had these vaccine appointments or reactions, or there are things that need to be discussed that you can feel it. I remember going to the pediatrician and feeling like he was just like, okay, anything else? Like, it just feels like he's ready to move on to the next thing.
Yeah, like your hand's on the door. And I used to do this. Like, my hand would be on the doorknob and the parent would ask another question.
Well, because
and I'd be like,
so many of these moms are just happy to talk to an adult when they've been home all day with these new babies for, I mean, for real. That having, and they want that sense of like feeling more comfortable and secure about this experience that they have no idea about and that they're basically winging it and it feels uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so it's like, just to have that reassurance makes it feels good. So you might find yourself asking questions you don't even need to know the answer to just because you're feeling a little safer having more discussion with somebody. But it's so clear as a parent,
I feel like parents have no idea. They don't know their insurance only pays the doctor $50 for the checkup, and so I think the parents kind of rightly so feel entitled to like 20-30 minutes with a doctor for your checkup. But I feel like if you're expecting that doctor to take your insurance as payment, then no, you only get 10 minutes because otherwise the doctor's going bankrupt. I was going bankrupt. We were basically, I don't know if we're in the red or the black, whatever the bad one is,
red.
You know, we're in the red, you know, month after month. And it's just like, because we, you know, couldn't make it work. So that was starting to take the joy out of it. And I was kind of like losing my mind over that.
And so your dad was kind of known for his unpopular parenting model or style, and he was already writing books at that time by the time you were a doctor, right? By the time you became a doctor?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
What was the basis of his approach, his books? Like, what was he kind of known for that he started to get this notoriety for? Because he ended up becoming not just a hometown pediatrician that nobody knows about, he ended up making a name for himself. Why?
Right. Well, this all kind of stemmed from my little sister, their fourth child. You know, she was this, you know, colicky, high need baby that cried all the time and needed a lot, needed to be held all the time. And they actually raised myself and my older brother and our next brother without attachment parenting. You know, we were breastfed and we were parented, but just kind of in a regular sort of standard way. And when they had our first sister, they realized this is not going to work. This child needs more. And they basically decided, you know, they couldn't find any books that would tell them what to do. So they kind of, you know, my mom and my dad just kind of said, okay, well, what makes this child happy? What do we do with her? And they just found holding her all the time made a huge difference. Wearing her in a baby sling made a huge difference. She ended up, I think, breastfeeding for like 4 years. Co-sleeping, like she wouldn't sleep unless she was in their bed. So they basically did attachment parenting just to survive. And that's really what is that, like the mid, I don't know, like the late 70s, I suppose, is what we're looking at, and or early 80s, and that's kind of how in their minds attachment parenting was born for them, although it was already out in the world everywhere. But what I look back at, and I saw what my dad went through as he then started writing about attachment parenting. His first book was Creative Parenting.
And he had never written before that?
No, not before that. Never written before that. So Creative Parenting was basically his, like the light bulb went off in his head about, hey, I'm going to write about our experience with this child and that there's this other way that you can raise children. That was kind of counter to Dr. Spock. Dr. Spock was kind of the sort of like the scheduling, you know, sort of standard how to, you know, raise a baby back then. And so he was trying to basically counter that. And I, you know, now so many years later, I can look back and I saw what he went through with that. A lot of the same things I've gone through with the vaccine issue. He developed this unpopular opinion, yet some people got it. It spoke to some people. And some people really embraced it and loved it.
And he developed a following.
Yes, and they loved him for it. But he was ridiculed a lot in the mainstream. And
for what? What was
For his, you know, crazy approach to parenting.
What was considered crazy about it?
Co-sleeping. Extended breastfeeding was very much, you know, frowned upon. Responding to your baby's cries as if it's language. Basically, attachment parenting, they just said that's going to spoil children and that's not how you raise children. And so he was actually ostracized some among his colleagues, among his medical colleagues and doctor friends. And I think that's partly why we moved away from one of the places we lived, and we moved out here to California, is he felt kind of so pressured and ostracized over that mission in his life that he decided to, you know, he had to kind of pick up and move.
So where did his attachment parenting ideas or his even natural childbirth and things like that, where did all that come from for him?
Well, I think natural childbirth came through La Leche League.
And he was part of
the Bradley method that my mom kind of became a part of.
So prior to that, he was very traditional Western medicine?
Yes, yeah.
So your mom was the one that sort of opened his eyes to some alternative, more natural approaches to all this.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of it did come from my mom, you know, through, like, I think when she had this high-need baby, she reached out to La Leche League. She actually had that baby at home, and so she kind of did a lot of, like, Bradley method training for childbirth. And that actually, that was the other thing.
Home births big
back then? They had her at home. No, they were not.
I was going to say.
No, you're crazy if you had a baby at home.
So then I guess maybe the question should be your mom. Where did that come from for her?
I don't know. For her, it was like we lived in South Carolina. It was like an hour drive to the hospital. And it was our fourth baby. She's like, no way.
Oh, okay.
She's like, you know, Bill, we're having this baby at home. He's like, okay. And then that kind of realized, hey, we can do this. Mm. And then that morphed into the attachment parenting and then the whole thing. And
I see.
But he knew he really strongly believed he was right. And not that attachment parenting is the right way to parent, but it is a way to parent. It is
a successful way for some people.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you can, it's okay to embrace that. And so as a doctor, he wanted to support that. And that kind of became his mission. And he's been writing about that ever since. But he went through a lot of the same stuff that I've gone through. But it turns out all the developmental specialists and attachment theory, you know, specialists, people that research child rearing, actually almost all of them now believe attachment parenting is probably the healthiest emotional and then psychological way to kind of like to raise babies, as opposed to a detached way.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think mainstream medicine has kind of come around to promote long-term breastfeeding. They don't support co-sleeping yet, but mm-hmm. they promote long-term breastfeeding and being an involved, attached,
and
baby-wearing kind of parent. So I think he was kind of vindicated, so to speak, in
home
that
births
mission.
Are still unpopular.
Right.
Even though people are doing
them. In the mainstream. But they're more popular in the public.
But I mean, it is the way it used to always be. So again, it's just going back to how things used to be. It's just ironic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, even with the vaccine issue, going back to being vaccine free and actually having an immune system that fights things is the way it always was. So it's really funny to be unpopular now just to go back to the way that we've always done things and how nature always did things.
Yeah.
So as he kind of had that ostracization.
There you go. We're leaving all that in there.
So as he experienced that, then did he also kind of get a reputation for himself amongst patients to be the one who supported that? So therefore his became basically that, which again is very similar to
just
you.
Just like me,
but in a different issue, but it's the same. You get ostracized over here, but then people understand your niche and you're specialized. And if that's the thing that they believe in, that they want to come see you for that reason, which to me is smart anyway, like coincidentally smart, because it wasn't the intention, but it's so nice to have a niche when a doctor is a dime a dozen, right? There are doctors everywhere. There are pediatricians mm-hmm. everywhere.
Yeah.
People pick within their network. It's like, it's just so, there's so many. To have a niche, to have a specialty, to have something where you do things a little differently makes it a lot easier to sort of find your people and have your people mm-hmm. find you.
Yeah.
And so you're not just a run-of-the-mill doctor. You're now somebody who has, you know, this expertise in a certain area that fits with certain people, and then they can come find you. That's if I ever went into medicine, which I did think of doing when I was younger, that's what I would have done, is something like that where it's niche. Yeah. Because it's funny that your dad had a niche and you have a niche, but they're both different, but they're following the exact same pattern. And it allows for, I think, a more invested and involved practice. You have people that are seeking you out for this. One thing, you know they're going to be like-minded. It's not just boring, run-of-the-mill, routine practice stuff. You get to kind of like integrate lives a little differently, because this has to do with the lifestyle and the way that you raise your child. This is not just textbook stuff. This is unique.
Yeah, and how nice is it when your niche is something you 100% believe in?
Yes.
You feel is... You feel right about it. You feel good about it. It's not just a business gimmick.
Totally.
You know, you're not creating a product that's going to sell well and people are going to flock to. You believe it with all of your heart. And it's like you want to serve every family that is looking for that. Mm-hmm. And that has been a great joy to me. It is a great joy to my dad, you know, growing up, being able to serve patients as a doctor who supported extended breastfeeding and co-sleeping and attachment parenting. I mean, imagine how ridiculed parents were for those kinds of practices from a lot of mainstream doctors and friends. And then to find a doctor who says, yes, I did that same thing.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think you're doing the right way. And so when I, like every single new patient I get, I always ask patients, so like, you know, so what brought you here compared to like where you used to be? Like, mm-hmm. why did you leave your other pediatrician? I always know why. Mm-hmm. I haven't yet found a patient who said any other answer than we're looking for a doctor who will accept that we don't want to vaccinate
or support our choice,
or that we want to delay vaccines until a certain time. Every single one of them answers that. And one of the first things I say is, well, you're very welcome here. You know, a lot of my patients also choose not to vaccinate, so I'm very used to that choice. And it's not like I say, you know, I agree with you, you're totally right, you know, you're right on. And, you know, it's basically I just let them know that they're completely welcome. You know, I acknowledge they have every right to choose that as a parent. And I want them to feel welcome. And as I get to know them over the years, you know, and we talk more about vaccines, I start to share more of my thoughts on it. But I can see the relief on their face, you know, and they just, and it's like, even though they should know they're safe there, most of them, the first time they say the V word, there's like a little, they like pause a little bit, or they kind of like step back a little bit from me, or they kind of raise their eyes, or it's always like, well, it's because we kind of chose not to vaccinate. And I'm like,
and they're reading the room.
yeah. And I'm like, you can totally say that word here. It is okay to say that you
don't
vaccinate.
Used to being
here.
Bullied and intimidated. That's the reality of what it's like working with doctors.
I think they just thought it was too good to be true, that there's a doctor that will actually willingly accept them as patients, because they've been through, you know, five other doctors who've just yelled at them or wouldn't even, you know, make an appointment with them. Maybe they think it's too good to be true. So I love seeing the relief on their face and how they feel welcomed on that. And again, it's my niche, but it's a niche that I felt like I had to provide for people, because it was there was virtually, you know, nobody around that was willing to offer that.
Well, that's the best way to do it, too. You want to believe in the thing that you are doing. As a career, mm-hmm. you want to believe in the thing that you're doing, because you're serving people based on the good intention. You're serving people based on that willingness to really make a difference in their lives that you believe in and you support. And when you do that, you don't feel like you're selling something. You don't feel like you are working. You feel like you're contributing and you're serving, and you're fortunate enough to be able to financially be supported that way so that you can have a life and you can provide for your family. But it's bigger than that. And that part's nice.
It's nice when you're not selling something. It's interesting, because I'm almost like underselling every single patient that walks through my door, because I'm not making, you know, I like for every patient that comes to my office, I would make probably about $1,200 to $1,500 of profit if they were vaccinating, you know, like throughout their 5 years of life. Mm-hmm. So I'm making already $1,500 less per patient. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably only seeing them for about half of the checkups that we would otherwise do, because they're not coming in like every other month for a lot of shots at the beginning. So I'm actually I'm underselling them.
And then your clientele also isn't sick often because they're health conscious families. Right. So they don't come in a lot for visits.
Right. I was thinking the other day, as you know, I was talking to my adult kids, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, when was the last time I even saw an ear infection? I used to see tons of ear infections. And the first, 10, 15 years of my practice, where I think most of my patients were partially vaccinated mm-hmm. back then. Now very few are, but most of back then were partially vaccinated. I don't know if it's related, but I was seeing tons of ear infections, 3 or 4 ear infections a day, lots of antibiotics when needed. And
you're getting even more holistic too with your approach now compared to how it used to be.
Yeah,
right?
So when I see kids, we're more holistic now, but I'm like, I don't see ear infections anymore.
And you used to give out antibiotics a lot more and prescribe them because that was kind of what you're taught to do.
Yeah, you're taught to do that. You're taught to be careful, but you're taught to do that. But that's where I started to learn from patients in my office. Mm-hmm. I after maybe the 10th mom told me, I just put mulene garlic oil ear drops in my kids' ears. And the first few that told me that, I probably gave them the look, that you're used to getting.
You're just a mom. I'm the doctor. I'm sorry. Leave it to me. I've got the degree, dear. Okay, sweetie, with your little supplement idea here. I'm the one that read the books, okay?
So. No, but I was smart enough to know, because I learned who the smart patients were. And so as I saw these garlic drops working for the kids' ear infections, I started recommending it. And I was able to stop giving antibiotics. But now I'm not even seeing the ear infections anymore.
Right.
I think, as over the last 5 years or so, as I think I might have 1 or 2 families a year that want to give their babies vaccines, and the rest are waiting until school age mm-hmm. or later or not at all. I'm just not seeing the ear infections in babies anymore. It's kind of nice.
So do you feel you have a healthier clientele than most pediatricians do?
I do. I very strongly feel that way.
Why are you saying it that way? You're like, I do.
Well, I mean, it would be nice to be able to prove it.
Wait, can you say it just more strongly? I do.
I do.
I strongly feel I have a healthier clientele than most people.
Well, I think the hesitation is why.
Not the question.
You're right.
The question is, do you feel?
Yes, I absolutely feel like I have a much healthier patient population. They almost never get sick. Like I said, I'm not seeing the ear infections. I'm almost never seeing pneumonias. I'm barely seeing strep throat anymore. I'm seeing the routine stuff that like everyone used to catch, like roseola, where you get like the fever and the rash, and I'm seeing like, colds, and I'm seeing the flu. But the kids I'm seeing, I'm often not even seeing them because they're barely sick enough to even come in to be seen. But when I do see them, I'm seeing the ones they're like, I know I shouldn't even be here, but I just need a little reassurance. I look at them, their ears are fine, their lungs are fine, they barely look sick, and so I don't have to do anything for them. And I feel like there's this huge difference to these last 5 years of my practice compared to the first 10 years of my mm-hmm. practice. I was loaded, the waiting room was loaded with sick kids all the time. And I love that. And I love seeing a patient and I'm like, gosh, I haven't seen you for 2 years.
Right. Because you haven't had to.
Right. I haven't had to.
That's
and I
a good
love
thing.
Not having to see people.
Yeah.
That's actually a great joy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just feels like the medical establishment has failed us in so many ways, in the sense that their entire goal has been to teach us to be dependent upon them mm-hmm. instead of teaching us how to sustain and support our bodies and our health on our own, which to me is a sign of good health, which means you're succeeding. You've done your job. As a doctor, you've done your job. If you're teaching your patients to be so healthy, they don't need to see you. That means you're actually doing your job. You're taking the education that you've learned, and you're passing it on to them so that they learn how to support their own body and support their own immune system. But we have it backwards, where it's like, we think we need to make them dependent on us. They need to come in for frequent visits. They need to have lots of medical interventions. They need to be on lots of medications. Everything needs to be something that's prescribed. Everything needs, mm-hmm. there's a treatment for everything yeah. instead of, it's never just let the body handle this or it will pass on its own or here's some things you can do to make the body stronger to handle this in the future. I think it's completely flipped around. This concept of medicine and what a doctor's job should be, because the doctor's job, you don't want to see a bunch of sick people, chronic sicknesses right. or acute infections. That should be what you don't want to see. You want to see thriving, healthy children and adults that are dealing with life and being yeah. able to manage okay. But that's not really what we're seeing, because we have all these chronic illnesses in children and in adults.
Right.
And these chronic diseases and things like that, that it's the opposite of health.
I know, but I love that most of the kids I see are that mm-hmm. perfect picture of health. And I kind of take this approach that I almost try not to have to do anything with a child.
Right.
Like you're there, I make sure you're growing well, I make sure your development is on track, you're socially interacting with me, your language is developing well, you're gaining enough weight. I do a very thorough physical exam on every child that's there. But I almost feel like I'm not having to like try to find a whole bunch of, you know, stuff to give them or have them do. I almost try to encourage parents to, you know, trust their own intuition and, you know, learn things, you know, themselves. I answer a lot of questions during a lot of checkups, but after I've done a few checkups on a kid, you know, the parents often have fewer and fewer questions. And as the kids get older, they're just there like, yeah, I just want to make sure the kid's healthy. I don't really have any questions or problems to solve. And so I love it when I love labeling a patient. I'll just be like, you know, your child is just so healthy. They're such a routine child. You know, they're doing so well. You know, I don't see a single thing wrong with them. They're growing well, they're developing well, they're super healthy. And so I almost feel like I'm trying not to intervene. And that's actually a great feeling when a kid leaves and I just was able to, you know, give maybe a few tips about health and nutrition or staying active or going outside or a few key, you know, supplements for the winter or for COVID or something. But it's just a great joy when I see kids and they don't have any of those chronic illnesses right. to solve.
So we're going to wrap up this first part of the interview with Dr. Bob Sears.
Wait, there's so much more to talk about.
I know
about.
They're going to have to tune in to hear the rest. So come back to the next episode of the Vaccine Conversation as soon as you get that notification on your phone, because we know you're subscribing. So as soon as you get that notification that tells you new episode is up, you can hear more about Dr. Bob Sears. Thanks for joining us.
The information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as medical advice. Always consult your healthcare professional for information on vaccines and infectious diseases.